WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Governor Northam says he's ramping up enforcement of the mask-wearing mandate and physical distancing measures. At least some of Richmond's recently removed Confederate monuments are being stored at a wastewater treatment plant. And activists and some lawmakers say the program that transfers military equipment to local police departments needs to change. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, July 15th. Governor Ralph Northam says he's ramping up enforcement of a mask mandate and physical distancing measures at restaurants and stores. He says he's concerned about a rising number in COVID-19 cases, particularly among young people, and especially in areas near beaches. In Tuesday's press conference, he said local health departments and ABC officials will increase unannounced visits to businesses to enforce mask wearing. Throughout the state, except in Northern Virginia, the daily average of new cases has climbed in recent weeks. Northam acknowledged that case numbers in Virginia are increasing again, but he wants to avoid the spike in cases that other southern states, such as Texas and Florida, are currently experiencing. Northam said the state's eastern region, which also includes the Eastern Shore, has seen the daily average of new cases rise from about 60 in early June to nearly 350 now. Meanwhile, a Republican member of Congress from southwestern Virginia has tested positive for COVID-19. Representative Morgan Griffith said he learned on Tuesday that he had tested positive. He said he does not have significant symptoms and is self-isolating. Griffith represents the 9th District. He's the first member of Congress from Virginia to test positive for the virus, according to GovTrack. The decision on when and how to reopen schools is not just about health and safety. It is also a matter of dollars and cents. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
How much will it cost to reopen Virginia schools this fall? In order to make that happen, schools will need a lot of plexiglass, PPE, and nurses, plus all the new extra staff members working to keep children physically separated. The potential cost is anywhere from $600 million to $3 billion for the coming school year. Chad Stewart at the Commonwealth Institute says lawmakers are about to consider a plan to allot funding that was put on hold back in April.
And what we know about a lot of that new budget funding is that it would benefit schools with the highest share of students from low-income households and students of color most. And those are a lot of the schools that are going to face the most barriers to reopening come this fall if they choose to do so.
Jim Livingston at the Virginia Education Association says teachers are worried they'll get into the classroom only to find the necessary precautions have not been taken.
Our folks honestly are skeptical because educators have been let down time and time again by promises of funding for resources to do their jobs, and those resources simply have not materialized.
Lawmakers will be returning to Richmond in August when they'll make decisions about how much money schools can spend on reopening and how much liability local school boards will have for keeping students, teachers, and staff protected from COVID-19. I'm Michael Pope.
Full disclosure, the Virginia Education Association underwrites programming on WMRA. At least some of the Confederate monuments recently removed from their displays in Richmond are being stored at a wastewater treatment plant. Photographs taken by the Associated Press and Richmond Times-Dispatch show a collection of statues and other large objects under tarps at the facility near Richmond's downtown. On July 1st, Mayor LeVar Stoney ordered the immediate removal of all Confederate statues on city property in Richmond, the one-time capital of the Confederacy. Stoney invoked his emergency powers, citing ongoing civil unrest and concerns that protesters would get hurt if they tried to pull down the enormous statues themselves. The only Confederate statue that remains on Richmond's prominent Monument Avenue is a memorial to General Robert E. Lee, located on state property. And Governor Ralph Northam's order to have that removed has been at least temporarily blocked by a lawsuit. On Tuesday, a judge in Lynchburg upheld much of a new state law that expands background checks for gun buyers, but he issued an injunction preventing it from being enforced on buyers between 18 to 20 years old. Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring's office said in a statement that Herring intends to appeal the injunction issued by Circuit Court Judge Patrick Yates. The law was one of seven gun control measures passed by the new Democratic majority in the General Assembly this year. It requires a background check for any gun sale, even between private individuals. Yates wrote that the act was valid and constitutional, but the state is not prepared to administer it in a way that does not infringe on the right of adults under 21 to buy a handgun. The latest Democratic lawmaker to announce a run for higher office next year works in cybersecurity for the Federal Department of Homeland Security. Hala Ayala says she'll focus on health care in her campaign to become lieutenant governor. From partner station VPM, Ben Pavier reports.
Ayala won her Northern Virginia House of Delegates seat in 2017, campaigning for Medicaid expansion. She says she wept when the General Assembly passed expansion in 2018, because she and her family relied on it a couple of times.
I was so proud because I knew what it was like to fear if my son got sick or if I got sick. What did that mean for us? How much medical bills?
As lieutenant governor, Ayala says she'd also support expanding paid sick and maternity leave. The Afro-Latina is the first Democrat to formally announce a bid. Delegate Elizabeth Guzman, who represents a nearby district, says she's also exploring a run. Either candidate would be the first woman to hold the job if they win. Ben Pavier, WMRA News.
Finally today, law enforcement agencies in Virginia have received about $22 million worth of military gear from the Defense Department, including everything from shotguns to Humvees. Some activists are calling for more oversight of that program. Ben Pavier has been following this story, and he sat down to talk with Catherine Comp, also a VPM, about what he's learned.
So, Ben, why does this program exist in the first place? Why do police departments need military gear?
The so-called 1033 program started in the 1990s during the war on drugs. That's the federal government's push to curb drug trafficking that critics say led to mass incarceration. The Defense Department gave local law enforcement gear it didn't need. Some of this stuff is pretty mundane, things like gloves or printers. But Virginia departments currently have almost 1,300 rifles from the program, over three dozen Humvees, and 20 mine-resistant armored vehicles. These are 30-ton vehicles designed to survive roadside bomb attacks in Afghanistan, and they're now in places like Greene County, Virginia.
And what would authorities in Greene County need with a vehicle like that?
Well, I filed a public records request with the sheriff's office there, and it turns out in the 6 years they've had the vehicle, they've never used it. I spoke to Sheriff Stephen Smith. He says he hopes he never has to take it out, but...
We will use it if we ever need to with our TAC team or whatever situation arises, you know, with a call for service that we have to have a vehicle like that. And we can use it in rescue situations like during floods or, you know, natural disasters and stuff like that.
All Sheriff Smith has to do is pay for the cost of shipping, not the item itself. John Jones is the director of the Virginia Sheriff's Association. He says the program can help with arming officers in cash-strapped departments across the state.
In this country, you don't have an armed police. You have armed police, and then you have a budget deficit, so you get the best deal you can get. And sometimes the 1033 program is that.
The counter-argument is that police are incentivized to become more militarized. The public became much more aware of the program in 2014 during the protest in Ferguson, Missouri. Ferguson police were heavily armed, and they got at least two Humvees from the 1033 program.
And did anything change after those protests?
President Obama issued an executive order in 2015 that ultimately led to new restrictions. Law enforcement could no longer get certain gear like tanks and high-caliber munition. President Trump undid most of those rules in a 2017 executive order. And now we're once again hearing calls to rein the program in. Yasmin Taib is with the activist group Demand Progress, which is pushing Congress to act.
What we're calling for simply is to ensure that we demilitarize our communities, that we don't see tanks kind of rolling down our streets in, you know, Richmond or in Washington, D.C., or anywhere else in the country.
Every year, lawmakers take a vote on a bipartisan bill to authorize defense spending. This year, Democrats and a few Republicans are proposing an amendment that would add new restrictions to the 1033 program. The idea is if it makes it to Trump's desk, he's less likely to veto it.
So if this passes, does Greene County have to return that giant armored vehicle?
That's unlikely. The vehicle would be banned, but law enforcement could get an exemption to use it during natural disasters. From what I can tell, the rules lawmakers are proposing wouldn't change much in Virginia because the gear law enforcement currently have would still be allowed.
One final question. Was any of this gear used in the protests in Richmond?
The Richmond Police Department doesn't have any gear from the program. State police got some night vision equipment back in 2011 and 2012. But most of the gear you've seen in the protest hasn't come from the 1033 program.
That's Ben Pavier talking with Catherine Comp of VPM in Richmond. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Wednesday.